Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt from Crowine Cottages in Kilkenny and I'm joined, as usual, by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. And we're live today, Friday, on from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. Now, we would love to hear from you while we're on air, so please feel free to send us in any questions or comments that you might have by text to 086-353-7782. And a busy show ahead of us today. On the show, we're going to be talking about food news as usual. Mags has paid a visit to the National Park down in Killarney. We'll be hearing about that. We'll also be talking a little bit about smallholding, as it's the last Friday of the month. We'll touch on some smallholding, so jobs to be doing with the animals at this time of the year, and things to look forward to in the coming month. And in the final part of the show, then, we'll be off to the garden to look at some jobs that we can do in the garden. And we might finish up today with a little bit of timely music, maybe a song by Robert Burns. Mags, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Happy Burns Day to you.
Yes, I have to say I've never been to Scotland on Burns Day or anything like that.
Have you ever been to Scotland?
Well, I have a few times, yes.
But the land of the Nesbitts. That's where we came from originally. Did I ever tell you the story about when I went to visit a few years ago? I was going camping, a group of us together, and there were some fabulous gardens at Blair Castle that I wanted to go see. And we drove past Blair Castle and we decided we'll go pitch the tents first down the road and then we'll come back and have a look at Blair Castle. We went, we pitched the tents, somebody opened a bottle of wine, that was the end of it, we went nowhere. The next morning, we packed up and drove away. And when I came home from that visit to Scotland, I looked up the Nesbitt clan, as you do. I'd just been there, Nesbitt tartan and all of that kind of stuff. The Nesbitt clan had had a clan gathering in Blair Castle that day.
I think you did tell me that before, actually.
And I drove past.
And they didn't know you were down the road.
I drove past it. Unbelievable. I'm raging. That's I'll never get over that.
Mad coincidence.
Can you imagine? I could have gone in and met all of these long-lost cousins. And there were photographs on the website when I looked it up, and there was a giant banner across the drive to Blair Castle saying, "Welcome the Nesbitts."
Oh, that would have been gas. Next time you won't open a bottle of wine too early.
Next time. God knows where they'll be next time. I haven't looked it up in a long time now. But yep, the Nesbitt family are from Scotland, around the borders.
Okay.
There you are. So very it's good. Burns night. We might finish Burns up with night. A bit of music tonight.
Yeah. It seems to be a big event in Scotland, actually. Mm. So he's a poet, Robert Burns, from the 18th century. His birthday is the 25th of January. So generally, I think it's generally a Friday it's celebrated and that. But so they celebrate it, and it's a biggish event in Scotland every year. And there's a lot of pomp and ceremony. If you're going to do it properly, there's actually quite a lot. I was reading about it earlier, and it's quite, I always like a bit of ceremony anyway, but it is kind of entertaining. And the food of the night is very Scottish. So you've got cockaleeky soup, maybe for starter, traditionally, and then haggis, neeps, and tatties for main course. Have you tasted haggis?
I have. I've had haggis neeps and tatties a few times now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't actually, but well, I've had neeps.
Very peppery.
Yeah.
Very, very
I'm
peppery.
I'm imagining something like kind of black pudding.
Yeah, it's a loose black pudding, basically. Very peppery.
You can make it now, though. Like traditionally, it was made with sheep's hearts, livers, and lungs, herbs and spices, and all the different butchers in Scotland would have their own variation on it. And you can buy it. And I was looking it up actually. You can buy it in loads of fancy butchers in London and that if you wanted to celebrate when you're away. But the tradition started after his death in 1976. Some of his friends gathered to commemorate his career and his life, and that was the start of the tradition. And centuries later, it's still going.
In 1876. Is that?
No, 1796.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You said 1976.
Sorry. Okay.
I was thinking that's very recent.
That's very recent. 1796. Yes. But initially, I think they did it on the day of his death in July, but then it turned into his birthday. But if you're going to do a proper Burns night, you must, have a piper to welcome your guests in, and then the piping only stops, the music stops once kind of the high table or the top table are ready to seat, and then the haggis is brought to the table on a silver platter by the chef, a piper again, and whoever's going to make the toast to the haggis. So
yeah, you toast the haggis, that's right.
Yeah, but there's a poem. He wrote a poem for haggis, so it's, what's it called, Address to a Haggis or something? Quite long. I'm not going to recite it now for you, but...
It's also quite difficult to understand what the hell it means, because it's all written kind of phonetically in his mixture of Scots and
It is a little bit, yeah. But, and the host, whoever is making that address and stuff, has to make it quite entertaining, so that's part of it. And then this entertainment goes on afterwards and stuff, so they have their dinner and that, and then the entertainment afterwards would be like music, Robert Burns music and songs and that. Dessert then is some kind of either a Scottish trifle or some kind of a pudding that's cooked in linen or cloth. And then the entertainment will be music and poetry, and there's always a toast to the ladies. And the toast to the ladies must include kind of selective Burns quotes and be as entertaining and as topical as possible in that.
He was a bit rude in his poetry at times, was Mr. Burns.
Well, maybe.
So some of those addresses could be quite racy, I'd say.
They should be quite entertaining, is the idea and stuff. Right. So, and there would be lots of whiskey and stuff, and whiskey is generally, you know, neat whiskey is poured on the haggis and stuff. It's apparently prudent that whoever is cutting the haggis, who's made the address to it, has it pierced beforehand, because apparently it can like burst a little bit, and you'll have bits of blood and guts, basically. Well, firing across the table.
It's a stuffed stomach.
Yeah, it's
so
a sheep's.
It's a sheep's stomach.
Yeah.
And if it's hot, there's a lot of pressure in there. So when you puncture it, then you get fat and all sorts squirting out. So you need to be careful.
That's exactly it, yeah. Mm. But now there's variations. You can have a venison one or even a vegetarian haggis if you want it. If you want to step away from the tradition. So anyway, I'm not going to have haggis tonight.
I had it in Edinburgh a long time ago, and for the first time, and I really liked it, but I was really surprised at the flavour of it. I was expecting a kind of gamey or awfully kind of taste, and it wasn't at all. It was just mad peppery.
Well, maybe it depends, I suppose. So if you've put a lot of pepper in or a lot of particular herbs or spices and that, it's going to taste different. So,
And neeps and tatties then, are you going to describe what they are to us?
Oh yeah, turnips. We were talking about what turnips are called. Well, that's what they're called, neeps.
Neeps and tatties then,
are potatoes and that. And they would have different, you know, they might be kind of a pureed version or more of a coarse version or but some kind of a mashed version. And some of the potatoes might be boiled and some might be roasted, but then all served together. So it's very traditional, I suppose.
And there's a strong food tradition attached to it. So it is their kind of Paddy's Day in a little...
I suppose.
In a way. It's a celebration of all things Scottish and so on. And a very strong food tradition that goes along with it that we don't really have on Paddy's Day. You know,
No, there's
no one dish that everybody would have. You know, it could be stew or it could be...
I think that's more of a recent thing than actually.
Really. Yeah. But no, fair play to the
Paddy's
Scots.
Day has a religious... connection here that this doesn't have a religious connection. There you go.
So enjoy your Burns night tonight. When you're having your dinner, have a think about Mr. Burns, and we'll finish up the show tonight with one of his songs. Now, in other news, just to let people know ahead of time, on the 2nd of February here in Kilkenny, Wildlife in the City is helping to celebrate World Wetlands Day at the New Park Marsh, which is just minutes away from where we are now. Have you been down to the New Park? It's
nope.
A fen. And Birdwatch Ireland are gathering there, the Kilkenny branch, on the 2nd of February at 11 a.m. And they're going to be bringing in people to show them the overwintering birds and the other wetland birds that make New Park Fen their home. So it's free, absolutely free. Children must be accompanied by an adult. The paths through the fen can be quite wet, so they recommend that you wear appropriate footwear and clothing. There's no parking available there, which makes it awkward to get in.
Have you been down there?
I went down once a long time ago now, and I had a bit of a wander around. Wasn't terribly pressed, like it's not quite Wexford slobs, but and the day I was there, actually, there was a big cleanup going on, so there were bags and bags of rubbish just as you arrived, which wasn't great. But I'm going to go on the 2nd. I want to go down and have an expert show me what I was missing.
Pat Durkin, I think, who was out watching the murmuration and that, he's doing it.
I look forward to that. So that's not tomorrow, that's the following Saturday. Saturday the 2nd of February, New Park Fen here in Kilkenny at 11 a.m. and Birdwatch Ireland will be there to tell us all about what's going on there. So I might try and have a chat with the lads on the morning and report back to here.
Very
after
good.
That.
Did you get up to see the moon on Monday morning?
What a disappointment. Mm-hmm. I did. I got up, and not only that, I woke up the 12-year-old boy and the two of us went downstairs. Now, the sky was an amazing red kind of colour.
What time was that at?
5 a.m.
Not up in Bon Scare, I have to say, but anyway.
5 a.m., there was a very, very thin cloud just covering that part of the sky, so you couldn't see the moon, but the cloud was kind of coloured red. Couldn't capture it on film at all with the camera. It was nice to see, but we were back in bed like 4 minutes later because the cloud didn't look like it was going to be going anywhere and you couldn't see the moon.
Well, I promised my children that if it was something spectacular, I'd wake them up, so I didn't actually wake them up.
I should have checked first, I suppose.
But I could see like the total eclipse, so you couldn't really see the moon. It was gone at 5.
Yeah.
And then, but you could see kind of a hazy, like, light, small light in the sky. And I was very tempted to go back to bed because I was thinking it's very cold out and it's not that exciting. But then gave it a bit of time and stuff. So I stayed up for an hour and then you could gradually see the eclipse, so you could see the actual the moon starting the shape. So I watched that for, I don't know, maybe half an hour or something, and that was kind of nice, but I wouldn't have woken the kids for it because it wasn't that clear. And you know, I think we're used to seeing pictures of stuff where it looks like absolutely spectacular with this really sharp line and that, when you're looking at it from it doesn't have that sharp line, it has kind of a much more less distinct and less dramatic looking shape.
Have you noticed when sometimes you're driving in the early evening and the moon has just risen, just after it's gotten dark, and as it's near the horizon or it's over a tree or over a house, it looks enormous. And then during the night, later on, when it's at its peak and it's up in the sky, it seems much, much smaller. So the eclipse was happening when it was well up in the sky, and so it was a very small little moon. And the cloud didn't really kind of help or whatever. Now, there's a phenomenon whereby when you have a comparison between two things, the moon looks bigger when it's closer to something that you know the size of. So when it's over your house, it looks enormous. Or when it's on a tree or near the horizon, it looks much bigger, even though it's exactly the same size as it is when it's much higher in the sky. It's because you're comparing it to something.
Is that it?
Yeah, it's an optical illusion.
That is an optical illusion.
So that's why it looks so much bigger. Because it's not closer in the evening and then going further away.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an optical illusion that makes it look much bigger.
Wow.
So if the eclipse was to happen early on in its ascent, it would look much more spectacular. And the other thing is, a lot of those photographs you see are taken with ginormous lenses. And they also have something in the foreground. So you get the optical illusion of the comparative size plus the telescopic lens of the camera.
Yeah.
So when you look at it in real life...
I took a photo and it literally looks like a black sky with this small little bright light, and the, like, so completely unspectacular, like you would not be getting up at 5 o'clock to look at it at all. But I'm glad I got up, actually. I'm glad I saw it.
The best one in 18 years.
Yeah, there was a friend of mine watching in Dublin as well, actually, so we had a bit of a chat and then all went back to bed.
Well, it was a bit of a pity that there were clouds, and it was such a beautiful evening early on. I was really looking forward to it
because
the sky was all clear and all of that, but it didn't quite happen. Now, one other thing to mention in news before we go to the break. Registrations are now open for Ontashka's National Spring Clean. And that's at nationalspringclean.org. It doesn't happen until April. I think it's a fantastic event, and local groups get together all over the country and do a clean in their area. And the groups can be tidy towns, or it can be just a load of neighbours getting together and tidying up their road. It's always amazing the amount of stuff. They give the stats at the end of the event, the thousands of tons of rubbish that's kind of picked up around the place. But if you get if you go on to nationalspringclean.org and register your group or your event, then they'll send you out some information and also some things to help you with your work. So that's well worth doing.
Yeah,
so nationalspringclean.org if you and a group of friends or neighbours want to get together and do your bit to clean up your area. Now, anything else in food news before we go to the break?
No, puppy news. Do you want puppy news?
What's the latest on puppy the puppies?
Puppies are 6 weeks on Wednesday, so they're all microchipped and vaccinated, and they have little tags now with their names.
My God, you're
although apparently I got all the names wrong. My kids, it doesn't really matter. But
do they all look the same?
Well, no, some of them don't. But and some of them are male and some of them are female. But yeah, so they're moving on and stuff. They're all chasing around the yard and things now. So yeah, it's good. And
a very cute age, 6 weeks.
Yeah, like, they're
fab, flopping
actually
on top of each other, and
you just say puppies and they all come running in that.
Aww.
You know. So yeah, so one is heading off next week actually to its new home.
Oh wow, it's going far.
Tipperary. There's a few going to Tip actually, but one going next week. And
is that not a bit early? 7 weeks now, should it,
it
not
is
be eight?
Early actually, but the vet said it's okay, and like the mother is, you know, is staying away from them more and more and stuff. They're feeding like regular food.
They're eating.
Oh, they've been eating it for 2 weeks and stuff.
Okay.
So they're, I think they're well able actually.
Oh, we're having some flickering here in the studio. I hope we're not about to get a power cut. Oh, there was a massive power cut on Sunday out in Ardmore Studios when one of Ireland's biggest TV shows was on. Did you see that?
No.
Dancing with the Stars went off the air for 6 minutes because of a big power cut.
6 minutes? Yeah, well, I didn't even hear about that.
There you go. Myself and Martha were watching it. I don't like to admit that, so I won't tell anybody.
Everybody.
Right, we'll take an ad break and we'll be back in a couple of minutes after these. Text us on 086 353-7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden, and I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and we're live today from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated every Monday from 4 to 5, and you can get in touch with us by text to 086 353 7782. Now, the last Friday of the month, and so it's time to be talking about the small holding and the animals thereon, and kind of jobs to be doing at this time of the year, and looking ahead for the next month. How are all things out at Hedgehog House?
No change really since I mentioned the geese the last time. They're absolutely, I don't know whether it's the start of spring or something, but they're savagely cross.
Oh.
And there's two ganders now, so I'm literally, I walk to the car and I get chased.
Maybe time to move them down to the field now, or is there...
They go where they go, sort
right,
of thing.
Okay.
I like them because they're great security-wise.
Mm.
Like, nobody comes near the place. People are terrified. But yeah, they're a little bit annoying at the moment. So I know once, maybe it's just the onset of, it kind of feels like it's kind of spring and stuff that has them wound up, I'm not sure. But I do need to call my numbers a little bit. So even the kids are saying, please put one in the pot. So we might just do that. And
isn't it strange that the geese just never... when I had them, they never kind of take to you. You'll never become friends with one of the geese. Like, I have some hens that know me and they'll run after me because they think I'm going to feed them.
Mm.
Or they establish a kind of pattern. You know, they know I keep the wild...
But they won't try and kill you.
They won't try and kill me, no.
Mm.
But
mm.
with the geese, they never...
They're very strange, actually. And these, like, will sit outside the kitchen window every single night waiting for me to put them to bed. And then, like,
but they won't thank
so
you for
ungrateful.
It.
Like, snap your legs off. And if he does grab you, like, he'll grab you, you know, by your trousers or your skin if he can get it, and then whack you with his wings. Like, he means, you know, it's not, he's grabbed, you know, if I had a brush or something in my hand and stuff, he'd grab the brush and start whacking that. He obviously has some kind of a persecution complex or something. The females are not like that at all. They just, you know, make
they are very placid. Yeah.
They're perfectly nice and stuff. So it might be time just to move on the old guy.
I once had a couple of the geese made nests in the walled garden, and it was around this time of the year, and I thought, perfect, like, it's not getting in my way yet, and they'll be secure in there behind the wall. And I left the two of them in there with a gander. And there was plenty of grass. They had loads to eat. And one of them, I thought, quite cleverly made her nest up on top of the compost heap. Oh. So it was getting additional heat from underneath as well as the heat that she was providing. And they take the eggs take 28 days to hatch. And on day 27, I went up to the walled garden and a fox had gotten in over the wall, I don't know how, and had killed both geese, left the gander, but of course he was completely traumatised, but wasn't able to take either of the geese out with it over the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously couldn't carry them.
Yeah.
So had just munched away on a bit of the geese beforehand and then had come back and taken over the course of the night the eggs. So there was nothing left.
Carnage.
What an awful.
They're not great to make a good nest, actually. I've noticed in the past they'll just, you know, lay an egg literally on the gravel, and another one, they lay one in the pond one day, just like all over the place. It's hard to get them to actually raise some young. Once they get going, they're okay, but they're a bit sloppy, actually.
I think we've probably domesticated those instincts out of them, because a lot of the eggs would be raised in incubators and stuff like that, you know, for breeding. So there may be.
Perhaps. Maybe you should get some wild geese.
Yeah. I wonder, would the wild geese be more friendly?
They might. They couldn't be any worse anyway.
Although they might take off at the wrong time. That'd be the only thing.
Yeah, that's true. These won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I do like watching them. You know, they have a pattern during the day of where they want to go and stuff, and they'll go to certain fields. But every time you go out the door, there'll be a ruckus. They'll make noise and stuff, and they'll come running. If they think there's anything happening at all, they'll come running.
How do they get on with the hens?
Oh, they're in charge. They will peck the hens.
Okay.
Yeah, when you're feeding them and stuff, they will peck the hens and that. But the hens just kind of run between them and they don't take much notice. They're not afraid of them or anything like that. But
okay.
They'll just peck at their backs.
Right. I had a chick emerge yet again a few days ago with a couple of chicks underneath her.
A chick with chicks?
A hen emerged with a couple of chicks.
Wow.
And when you do the calculations, she sat down on the nest of those eggs on Christmas Day in the garage. And I'd lost a hen a couple of weeks ago to a fox attack. And when I did the numbers, it looked like I'd lost three. But I hadn't. One of them had herself off to the garage.
Oh, right.
So now she has a couple of chicks underneath her in January.
The most unusual time of the year.
Well,
the weather is funny, so I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah, you'll have a lot of hens then.
I already have, although I've given some away and I've some others promised to people, but there's a few cockerels there that will end up in the pot. But I thought a very unusual time of the year for a hen to get broody.
Yeah.
But lovely to see the little chicks about the place. But sure, if we've a really cold snap, I'll have to be keeping them in and minding them now.
Yeah, the hens should mind them, but I don't know.
Mm.
Well, mine are starting to get a bit amorous, actually. That is, the spring is on its way.
It's in the air. I also have a duck who's sitting on eggs now in the floating duck house. I made a duck house a few years ago and it floats on the pond. And if the duck is quick and goes early, like around now, she might be able to raise a brood in there. But give it another few weeks, as soon as we get into late February, the moorhen will just take it over. And the moorhen, who is smaller than the duck, will actually just force the duck out of the place make her own nest. And she takes over this floating duck house. And then we've loads of... Yeah, very cheeky. But obviously the moorhen she's a tough bird.
And where is she now?
So at the moment she's just wandering around the place. They never stay far from the water. If I'm up on the pond in the morning, I'll often see her scarper into the bushes and stuff. She's very, very shy.
Right.
But obviously not shy with the other waterfowl when it's time to make a nest. And they make a brilliant nest. So normally their nest is built in the water, like a cranogue. And they build it up on sticks from the bottom and other detritus so that it stands proud of the water. But they use the water as a kind of defence.
Oh,
you know, so
clever.
They're out but into
do they
the water.
Build it kind of around reeds, no?
It's like a pillar is the best way of describing it. Now, if the water level drops, they can be left teetering on the top of this tower they've built. But it's a very, very well constructed nest, and when it's out in the water, obviously it offers them a great bit of protection. But on the floating house, she's already on the water. But still inside it, she'll build a little tower of sticks.
Aww.
Obviously instinctual.
Yeah,
and then she'll get into that and she lines it with feathers and other birds' feathers. And it's a really cozy looking thing.
It's a pity she doesn't build a nest for the duck.
Exactly.
or show the duck how it's done.
Yeah, let the duck use the previous year's nest or something. But when the little moorhens hatch, the eggs aren't very big. They're only about 3-3.5 centimetres. And when the little moorhen chicks come out, they are like little balls of black fluff.
Yeah, they're cute, aren't they?
Oh, they are so
cute. All small creatures
cute.
Are cute, actually, but they are cute. Yeah.
So cute. Actually, I've been thinking, I need to learn how to sex the chicks when they come out so that I can tell. Apparently, immediately after they emerge, it's obvious if you want to sex them. Apparently. And if you miss that window of a day or a couple of days, then you can't really tell until they, you know, develop their tail
feathers.
It's
in their sound, though, isn't it? You can hear them.
Really?
I've seen people, like, literally holding them up for...
Listening to them?
Yeah, yeah.
I must look into it.
Yeah.
Because I've raised way too many cockerels at this point.
Well, I think that's life, actually.
Mm. And if you hatch out a dozen, there's bound to be 8 of them are cockerels and 4 of them are hens.
Yeah, I had a batch of bantams, 6, it was 5 cockerels and 1 hen.
Oh, wow. Wow. Now, other things. So it'll soon be time for us to go pick up some pigs.
Mm, yes.
Are you going to get some pigs again this year?
I hadn't actually thought about it until you mentioned it there a few minutes ago. So I need to get my... They kind of ate a lot of the house last year, so I need to get someone to just do some work to that, actually, and fix it up a little bit. It seemed like... You know, something in the distance not so long ago, but time is flying past. So if I get that done in time, I will. Yeah, I'll get 2 pigs again.
It's funny, when they go off to the butcher in October, it does. It seems like ages and ages away before you'll pick up the next one. And like 4 months will pass, you know. So like if we're picking them up in February. But really, as with all animals, if you're picking up new animals, be it lambs or piglets or whatever, it's all about the prep before they get there. It's a bit late, you know, to discover you have a hole in your fence or there's a hole in the house when the animal is inside. It's best to kind of nail that stuff down if there's a dry day before they're around the place.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they don't help you do it.
No, and particularly with the pigs and stuff, well, I suppose others as well, once they get a taste for escaping, it's nearly impossible to actually contain them after that. I think last year you had an escapee.
I did.
Yeah, but once they get, like they've done that a couple of times, then they'll really do their level best to get through anything.
They don't forget. And it's like your pet. If your dog once visits the neighbour and the kids lavish it with attention and give it loads of treats, well, the next time it wants to go off and get some treats, it's going to go to the neighbour again. Yes. So these things are kind of habit forming. And when my pig last year got out, it obviously found something nice and just kept on trying to get out to go get something nice again. And they're curious creatures.
They are curious and they're kind of sociable as well. They actually like to be close to people, I think. So last year mine just wanted to be with the horse, actually. They didn't want to get out into the garden, which was nice for a change, but they just insisted and they would just literally walk under his feet and around his feet, and he didn't take much notice, but like they could, you know. There's a couple of funny photos of a spotty horse and spotty pigs and that, but yeah, now they did a bit of damage in his field, so we'll have to roll it before.
I thought horses didn't like pigs.
No, I have a good few photos. The previous year I had a couple of horses, actually, and there's a lovely photo of the 2 horses and the 2 little pigs. Oh. They're all a similar shade of brown. They don't really take much notice. Like, horses and sheep work very well in fields for grazing purposes and that. No, they don't actually, they don't bother them at all.
Mm.
The geese are a bit afraid of the horse, actually, which is nice to see them afraid of something. And they probably would be afraid of the puppies, actually, when we keep the puppies away from them at the moment, because the puppies are not afraid of them and they're used to things being afraid of them. So if the puppies kind of go running again off after them, they will get a fright.
And of course, they're in a pack, the pack of puppies.
Yeah, 7 puppies running like is quite...
Yeah, that would scare a bird, all right.
It would,
enthusiastic, stupid little puppies coming charging
cute,
towards you.
Cute. One of them has a little pink spot on its nose.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. So that's not a... That won't be for showing then, that one. Are you going to put that one down?
No. We're keeping one. The kids convinced me to keep one. So, and then all the others are going.
And have you got the one picked that you're going to keep?
Yeah, they've picked it.
A boy or a girl?
I think they're keeping a boy now, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they love them. They sit out in the shed with them on the bales of hay and chat to them. And
that's good for kids to raise puppies and stuff.
Yeah,
like
it
that.
Is. Yeah.
And actually, I see there's... I was up with a friend of mine in Drogheda a few days ago, and his kids are raising some rabbits up there.
Oh yeah,
lop-eared rabbits, and And so on. And there's a lot of people are keeping them now for meat, some of the larger varieties.
Oh, I've seen that,
New Zealand giant and so on. Now, if you're talking about securing fencing and so on for pigs with rabbits, you have to be very, very diligent because they'll dig under stuff, yeah. So they need a metal floor underneath them. They can squeeze out through quite small gaps. Because you kind of keep them outside, they're a great attraction to vermin and so on.
Oh,
so
I assume they're a great attraction to foxes, no?
Yeah, like, you will. You'll see that around his cage up in Drogheda, there's like a path worn by obviously a dog or a fox or a cat or something coming to pay a visit an evening and just wandering around looking for a gap every night. Mm. Waiting for somebody to make a mistake.
You weren't tempted to eat it anyway, were you?
No. Good. But they, I've never really kind of been tempted myself to keep the rabbits. There's plenty of wild ones out at Crowan, but a lot of people are keeping them now, some of the meat varieties. Mm. And they have one as well up there that needs to be shorn. It's like an Angora kind of type thing. It's very, very hairy.
Can you do something with the hair?
I presume you can spin it, but they don't. They just send it to the groomers and it gets a haircut.
All right.
A lot of care.
When animals need groomers and stuff, I kind of go, okay, especially a rabbit.
Yeah, I know. You can't even take it for a walk. But if you're picking up any animals, it's all in the preparation, and fencing is the most important. And, of course, providing shelter for the animals. So you have to consider somewhere for it to get in out of the rain or out of the draft. And I know up in the field at Crowan, there's field shelters there for the animals. And the only ones that never really use them are the alpaca. They stay out in the rain.
They're used to outside, aren't they?
Yeah.
They like it, yeah.
But everything else, the sheep will take shelter behind a wall out of the rain. They don't like the driving rain. And the goats and cattle will definitely go into the shelter in the cold and stay out of the way in there. So you need to provide them with shelter regardless of the animal. And the pigs are quite fussy. They don't like drafts at all. So they like somewhere dry that'll be out of a draft. And then loads and loads of fresh straw that they can make little nests out of.
And you'll look in and you won't see them because they'll be absolutely under the straw.
They'll be buried,
But they're really clean. They will just use one area for toilet. And same when they're outside, a bigger area outside. And I'm always amazed, like it's raining and you're down feeding them or something and they're inside because they don't like the rain. Mm. And in the heat last summer, that kind of wiped them out a little bit. They're not used to that sort of those temperatures, so they would be in the shade for that. They're clever enough. Animals always know where to find shade, don't they?
I set up a little drip for the pigs in the paddock last year, so that underneath was always wet and mucky.
Oh yeah,
so that
mine just drips.
Yeah, they need it really. You know, they turned it over, made it very, very muddy, and then they'd wallow in it.
Wallow in it, yeah. They would last year and stuff. Some years I don't think they'd bother so much with the wallowing, am I right?
It's good for getting rid of biting insects as well, but in the sun, they use it as a sunscreen. So they cover themselves in muck and it protects their skin because they can get sunburn.
That's right.
And last summer was hot. Can you imagine being outside the whole time, like in that sun last summer? Mm. So they were very mucky pigs last year. And then lying in the shade of the shelter then during the day.
There's trees in my run, so they would have kind of lay under the shade of the trees and been a bit more active then in the evenings and then escaped out into the horse. Crack.
Just before bedtime.
Yeah.
So shelter and bedding and fencing, very important. And then water, you'll never really carry animals or water to animals, will you? Like, you'd be killed trying.
Well,
you'll need a water supply where you're going to keep them.
You do.
And be it a trough or a bucket that you fill up from a local supply or something like that. They go through gallons and gallons of water. So I've troughs in all of the paddocks out at Crowan, and in the pig paddocks, they're metal troughs for obvious reasons, because the pigs, being so curious, they'll try anything in their mouth, and a plastic trough won't last long. They'll soon have that chewed to bits. So a metal trough with a constant supply to it, and then they'll splash that about a bit and will make a wallow for themselves if you don't make one for them.
And they will dig and dig and dig and dig. And they're so strong. When you see them, like, they will lift, you know, the turf of grass with their snouts and that. And if a pig wants to go a particular direction, it's very hard. Like, physically, you couldn't stop a good-sized pig. They will actually kind of plow through you, but they are really strong and they will just dig. It's just amazing to watch them sometimes, like they would turn over a garden an awful lot faster than any of us or even a machine actually.
It's amazing. They just get that snout down underneath the turf and then walk and they're basically plowing it in front of them. And they're down after worms and some nice roots. They're like dandelion roots and stuff like that, I think. So any tasty little morsels down underneath the ground, they can sniff them out.
And they spend a lot of their day doing that actually, just rooting around. And they like grass too. Nice fresh grass.
Yes, they do. And I'd often, during the summer, if they've already munched through the grass that's up there, if I'm delivering a load of grass to the ruminants, the sheep and the cattle and stuff, I'll throw in a few handfuls to the pigs and they'll munch away in it. They love it. And then they like flicking it around the place then as well and lying down. And if you keep animals, okay, we're keeping them for a purpose, you and I, they're going to end up on the table. But there's an awful lot of enjoyment to be had by just spending time with them and just watching them behave as they like to do. It's an enjoyable thing.
It is enjoyable, but
there are some jobs that you need to do as well if you're going to keep animals, and at this time of the year there's plenty to be done, and we might talk about those just after the break. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden, and I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey today, Friday from 4 to 5. We're live, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. And you can get in touch while we're on air. The easiest way to do that is by text to 086 353 7782. Now, we were talking about small holding before the break and keeping animals and the things that you need to do in preparation for bringing home some pigs or some sheep or whatever. A couple of questions in here. How much space do you need for keeping pigs, Mags?
Oh, God, I keep my two on, I suppose, half an acre.
Okay.
But I think I could definitely have four on that. No, I don't know officially what you're supposed to have, actually. But,
well, there's the restrictions on the minimum amount of space you need for a pig are very, very, very small. So half an acre for just a couple of pigs is ample. And what they do like is a bit of variety. So if you just have a very plain quarter or half an acre, they'll get bored quite quickly. They're intelligent animals. They like a bit of ground that's kind of rough, or if you had a small little wood or something like that that they could spend their time in, they would absolutely love that.
Somewhere to scratch as well. They do like that.
They like a good scratch. All animals actually like...
We all like scratches.
Yes. But so something that they can scratch against. And if you don't provide them with something to scratch against, they'll use the house or whatever you want them to go in, or a fence post, and they'll wreck it. Up in the field for the calf at my place, I got the head off a yard brush. You know the really stiff nylon brushes, the red ones? I got the head off one of those, and I've nailed it to a fence post. It's up at about a metre high, the bottom of the brush, and it's standing vertically. And the cow will come over and get its head in against that brush, and the bristles then scratch the top of the cow's head. And you can see where it likes to use it. It's bent the bristles,
from overuse, like a toothbrush.
Yes, exactly that. But a pig, you'll often see a pig get its hind quarter up against a fence post and give it a good old scratch.
They do, yeah. They like a nice bit of woodland or kind of even rough scrub. I've got this bit of gorse down at the end of mine, and they'll sort of rummage between it and underneath it. It's still growing, so they obviously haven't destroyed the roots or anything, but they do like that. And then it's a bit of shade and shelter with the weather as well. So that's kind of a perfect area. They don't want just a green field, really, so they don't.
No. They love a bit of variety and something that'll kind of keep them entertained. And with rocks, I often think, if they turn over rocks in a piece of ground, it's a great opportunity for you to go in then and kind of take them out. They're clearing the ground for you, or they're, highlighting where these stones are. But they actually like a few of them, because when they flip them over, they'll often find worms underneath. Yeah. So then they leave it a little while, come back later, flip the rock again, look for worms.
Well, mine, I didn't realise there were so many rocks until the pigs went in, and now it looks like a rockery, to be honest, because they've just dug them up and they've moved them around, and they'll move like a sizable rock actually. And I would have used kind of the bigger rocks along the bottom of the fence to stop them kind of pushing at it. But should they look... That's nothing to them. But anyway.
It is amazing the strength that they have. Like those necks and noses or snouts are very, very strong. And you really need to have your fencing in place and well put down. I brought some pigs to a man once to deliver, and I didn't really have the heart to tell him that he'd put his sheep wire upside down. So the small holes were on the top and the big holes were on the bottom.
Oh, right.
And of course, as soon as he put his piglets in, they ran out straight through the holes and away.
You have to have an electric fence.
You really do. You really do. For sheep, a bit more space you'd need for those, particularly because they just want to eat the grass. So you'd want to have some fresh ground for them to continuously move onto. You don't want to leave them in the same space, because when they walk on a piece of ground and they walk on the grass, they don't like to eat it after that. So it's best to kind of move them around if you can. And actually, that's true with all of the animals, really, isn't it? It's nice to have them somewhere fresh for them to go onto.
Yeah. So I suppose rotation.
Yeah.
Crop rotation. So moving them. Yeah.
And then you can rest the piece of ground that they've been on. With pigs, there is actually something that developed which is called pig sickness in ground, where if you keep them on the same piece of ground the whole time, parasites and diseases can actually build up in the soil. And so a new batch of pigs that you bring in will pick up every pest and disease or internal worm or parasite that all of the pigs you've had before that are in there will have. So with me, I have four paddocks set aside for the pigs, and then what I like to do is each year move them to a different paddock. I tow the house down, and then you're kind of giving a paddock a break. And if you run,
how long do you have to give a break?
Well, they say it would be good to keep, you know, for a year, but the longer the better, obviously, because what you want to do is you want to run in some animal that's going to break the life cycle of any parasite that's living on that piece of ground. So if they're producing worms and the worm wants to come out, live for a little while in a snail or something, and then go back into a pig, if you've broken that by running in some ruminants or some geese or horses, and a year has passed or more, then those parasites aren't there for the pig when they come back in. With the other ruminants, there are other things that live in the ground all the time. So there are treatments that you have to give them on a continuous basis. So if you're getting in sheep or cattle, they'll have to be wormed on a regular basis. So you have to have somewhere where you can close them down and give them the worm treatment. It doesn't take long. They never get used to it, though. They don't like it.
I got the horse actually wormed today.
It's
just a shot, which is easier for me.
All of these treatments that are for their benefit, they don't appreciate it. They really don't. So you generally given as an oral dose for the sheep and cattle, and every 6 weeks or so, and you really have to stay on top of that, because they can be quite badly affected by internal parasites, and they can end up with something that's called fluke, which actually causes
damage. Very nasty thing.
Speaking of nasty things, we'll come back to some of these other questions in just a minute, but they're at this time of the year. Most of the ewes are pregnant now, so unless you're very, very, very early lambing, we're just coming up to lambing season now. So pretty soon any sheep farmers you know will be, you better get them to do the any jobs or favours that you need off them soon, because you won't get them, they'll be mad busy. But when the lambs are born, they take a lot of their immunity to certain diseases and so on from, they get that in utero, so they take it from mammy. So now is the time of year to be providing them with vaccinations against what are called the clostridial family of diseases. So just before, a few weeks before the ewe lambs, she'll get an injection of Heptavac or something like that, which will protect all of the lambs against the clostridial diseases. And then they'll get a booster after they're born.
Okay. Now, is that done en masse in big flocks?
Oh, it's done en masse pretty much every flock. Because these are bacterial diseases which are pretty much endemic in the soil. So they live in the soil. And once, if you've ever had a strike of these, then it's there forever. And
this is what you had last
this
year?
This is what I had. Well, it's a few years ago now. But there's a variety of diseases, like things like tetanus and blackleg, disease, malignant edema, pulpy kidney and botulism. Pulpy kidney is one of the ones that struck me a few years back. I didn't vaccinate. And a gorgeous ewe ended up with her feet in the air. So I sent her off for an autopsy, and this is what it was. Once I found out that I had pulpy kidney, I knew that I had to vaccinate. Because if I have lambs now and they're not vaccinated, they'll be bouncing around the field. They'll look absolutely super healthy until they get to about 6 weeks. And at 6 weeks, these diseases take over, and That's the end.
And that's it then?
That's it. There's nothing you can do. There's no treatment you can do. So it's very, very important that the pregnant you gets her booster shot. They get some of the immunity from that, and then they get another booster after they're born. And most of those in vaccinations that you can give to the sheep now will also include a vaccine for pasteurilosis. So pasteurella, which is a nasty disease. It's a bacteria that lives on the sheep's tonsils, I think, most of the time. But if it takes over and gets out of control, it's probably the most common cause of mortality in sheep at all ages. Just like us, where stress can lead to an imbalance, and an infection like thrush or something like that that's living in your body can actually get out of hand. The same thing can happen with sheep with this pasteurilosis.
If they're stressed.
So a dog attack or something like that can cause...
Sheep can be delicate creatures,
very, very delicate creatures. They really care. And where with other animals like a pig, they might give you some warning if they're not well. So I had an alpaca, and she was just feeling a bit under the weather a few weeks ago, and I was able to take her in and give her a bit of TLC, and now she's flying. She really is. She's brilliant. With a sheep, often the first symptom you'll get is death. And the first symptom with most of those clostridial diseases...
They're quite serious diseases, in fairness.
Is death. There's just no warning that comes with it. So that's one of the jobs that has to be done around about now, and I'll be doing mine this weekend, I hope. But I do actually have a sick little sheep at the moment. Yeah.
What's wrong with her?
She was one of triplets last year and just never really thrived. I think in a commercial flock, she would have been bye-bye by now. So she was always quite small. And unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, she got caught in a row between the calf and the goat as they were trying to get some food at the trough one day. Yeah. And we have this little bullying circle goes on. The sheep are the bottom of the rung, and Daisy the goat will bully all of them out of the way when it comes to food time. So you have to put the food in like half a dozen different places, and then Daisy will bully them, but then the cat, Bill the goat, will come along and he will bully Daisy out of the way, and then the calf will come along and bully Bill the goat out of the way.
So the calf is at the top of the pecking order?
No.
The alpacas?
Because Daisy then comes back and she's able to bully the calf. Oh, so it's like a little circle. She bullies him, he bullies the...
Just leave them out. Let them work it out themselves.
But sadly, in this kind of game of musical chairs at the trough, this poor little lamb got in the way and got a belt or something. And so she's been feeling sorry for herself ever since. And I've been minding her. She's getting a bit better. But sadly with sheep, after 3 or 4 weeks of nursing, she could still end up just feet in the air.
And is she nearly freezer time?
Well, she's actually lost condition since she got a belt. So that's the other thing with sheep. They can they lose condition very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So if you've got a pig that's a bit under the weather, it might lose a little bit of weight, might lose some of the fat over a couple of weeks. The weight will just fall off a lamb if it gets unwell. So you want them heading off at about kind of 40, 44, 45 kilos.
Yeah.
And if you've got an animal that's about 40, 45 kilos and it gets unwell, it can be down to 30 or lower in no time at all.
I have to say, in my 5 years having pigs, I have never had an unwell or anything pig.
And that noise you hear in the background is everybody touching the table. Touch wood. Long may it continue. No, the pigs are great. They're very hardy.
Well, in fairness, you only have them for 6 months. So, you know, when you're not looking at the whole life cycle, it's just a short spell. So maybe, but they're really no trouble once you get them kind of landed. Well, once they don't break out, but
No, they're very, very hardy, and they're great kind of fun to have around the place. They'd be my favourite of the larger animals. Now, that's plenty to be kind of getting on with, I think, on the small holding, but we may mention some jobs to do in the garden.
Do you want to hear about Killarney National Park?
Oh, sorry, when were we going to? Oh, yes, please do. Yeah, we're racing away talking about the small holding there. Tell us about Killarney.
Well, I had to go on a job, and then I made a bit of a trip of it, actually. So, and I've been in Killarney many times over the years for various things, hill walking and various trips and that, but never in, like, the end of January. I have to say it's a great time to go because it's very few tourists. The place still looks spectacular because it is just a spectacular spot with the mountains, the lakes, the whole a whole lot. Killarney National Park, which is like one our most prominent national park, it's over 25,000 acres in its entirety.
Wow.
So there's lakes, woodland, grassland, and the kind of the backdrop is McGillicuddy Reeks, which is the highest mountain range. So have you been to Muckra's House, Muckra's Park?
Yes.
Fabulous spot. Just sitting there looking across the lake with the mountains in the foreground or in the background. So I went there and I had a great wander around the gardens, beautiful wall garden. The house was given to the state back in, I think, 1932, am I right? Or around then, actually. The owner wanted it to be the biggest and best playground in the world.
Wow.
So I think there's thousands and thousands of visitors go through it. So that's part of the national park. That was about, the Muckra's estate was 13,000 acres. So that's Muckra's Lake. And there's the old boathouses around the lake and stuff. Beautiful old buildings, some of them still with their slate roofs and that. And then you can walk through like amazing trees. Oh my goodness, because it's not, you know, some of the West Coast, you don't have enormous trees and stuff. It's been battered, but this is protected by the mountain range. So it's in like a nice sheltered spot. So there's some enormous cedars, enormous Scots pines. Like I was trying to estimate what height they were. They must have been about 40 metres, absolutely dead straight up to the sky. And then I did a bit of a hike up to Torque Waterfall, which is just beautiful. And there's kind of stone steps for a lot of the way up, actually. And even up past it, you walk for miles. If you think about 25,000 acres, you can do an awful lot of walking. And there's some cycle tracks through the place too.
And you had nice weather.
It was grey and dry, but it wasn't
dry.
Dry, exactly. It was.
You could go in August and be rained out of it.
Exactly. And it was nice. It wasn't busy, you know. So
because in the summer it gets packed.
It's where
modern tourism, they say, began, is in Killarney when Queen Victoria went to visit.
She started
the phenomenon of like paying a visit to an area.
Oh, there's like B&Bs and hotels and guest houses like just everywhere you look at the town, you know.
Will you save? I'm sorry, we've run out of time now, and we should have touched on that earlier on instead of waffling away about diseases in the animals. Will you save a report on the mussels and what you were doing for next week?
Yep, sure.
Brilliant, great. Well, we've run out of time in the kitchen garden for this week. We'll be back next Friday at the same time from 4 to 5, and this show is repeated on Monday at from 4 to 5. You can stay in touch during the week at Nesbitt F or at Mags Morrissey, or you can email kitchengarden@ckc.ie at any stage. Now, we're going to leave you with a song as promised, and have a happy Burns night.
A fond kiss and then we sever. A farewell, alas, forever. Deep in heart wrung tears I'll pledge thee. Warring sighs and groans I'll wage thee. Who shall say that fortune grieves him, while the star of hope she leaves him? Minute cheerful twinkle lights me, dark despair around benights me. I'll ne'er blame my partial fancy, nothing could resist my Nancy. But to see her was to love her, love but her and love forever. Had we never loved so kindly, had we never loved so blindly, never met or never parted, we had ne'er been broken hearted. Fare thee weel, thou first and fairest. Fare thee weel, thou best and dearest. Thine be ilk good joy and treasure. Peace and joy and love and pleasure. A fond kiss and then we'll sever. A farewell, alas, forever. Deep in heart-wrung tears I'll pledge thee. Warring sighs and groans I'll wage thee.